Agent VOA 1, the hits. Hang tight.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories, along with Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, U.S. rhythm and blues singer Mary Wilson has died at the age of 76. Wilson rose to fame as a member of the female three-person singing group The Supremes in the 1960s. Wilson started The Supremes with Diana Ross and Florence Ballard while living in Detroit, Michigan in 1959. The group signed a business deal with local R&B music company Motown Records 2 years later. But they did not have their first popular song until 1964 with Where Did Our Love Go? The Supremes would go on to sing a record 12 number one popular songs, including Baby Love, Come See About Me, Stop in the Name of Love, I Hear a Symphony, and You Can't Hurry Love. Songs, many television appearances, and live performances made them one of the most popular musical groups of the 1960s. The group helped turn Motown Records into an important part of American popular culture. Florence Ballard was replaced by Cindy Birdsong in 1967. Diana Ross left the group in 1969 for a solo career. But Wilson remained with the Supremes with different singers until the group officially broke up in 1976. She remained active for many years as a solo performer, motivational speaker, and U.S. cultural ambassador. The Supremes members Wilson, Ross and Ballard were admitted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1988. Her friend and spokesman, Jay Schwartz, said Wilson died suddenly Monday at her home in Las Vegas, Nevada. Motown Records founder Berry Gordy praised Wilson in a statement. He said she was quite a star in her own right, who worked hard over the years to boost the legacy of the Supremes. She was a trailblazer, a diva, and will be deeply missed, Gordy said.
The coronavirus most likely first infected humans after jumping from an animal. A team of international and Chinese scientists said Tuesday. A team of World Health Organization experts recently completed their closely watched visit to Wuhan. The Chinese city is where the first cases of the new coronavirus were discovered. Peter Ben Mbarek led the WHO investigation. He said the team's four-week visit did not result in major changes to the current understanding of the early days of the pandemic. But the visit did add details to that story, Mbarek noted. It also led the joint Chinese WHO team to dismiss the theory that the virus escaped from a laboratory. The Wuhan Institute of Virology has collected many virus samples. This led to claims that the institute may have been the place where the outbreak started. Experts now consider that possibility extremely unlikely. Mbarek said the team would not even suggest the theory as a path of future study. China had already strongly rejected that possibility and has publicly supported other theories. The Chinese and foreign experts considered several possibilities for how the disease first appeared in humans. Mbarek said the early findings suggest the most likely pathway the virus followed was from a bat to another animal and then to humans. The findings suggest that the laboratory incidence hypothesis is extremely unlikely to explain the introduction of the virus to the human population, Mbarek said. The investigation was a first step in the process of understanding the beginnings of the virus. Scientists have suggested it may have passed to humans through a wild animal, such as a pangolin or bamboo rat. It is also possible that the virus spread directly from bats to humans or through the trade in frozen food products. The team of WHO experts arrived in Wuhan on January 14th. Among other places, the experts visited the Huanan Seafood Market. That is where an early group of cases was reported in late 2019.
Claire Brennan Tilburg's 11-year-old daughter has been hospitalized twice in recent months after sharing that she was having suicidal thoughts. The Massachusetts girl has autism, depression, and anxiety. Although her daughter had been hospitalized before, Tilburg said things worsened when the pandemic hit. Her school went online and she could no longer meet with counselors in person. Suddenly, the structure and support that help many children keep a sense of normalcy were gone. Studies have shown that depression increases during teen years. One out of every 13 high school students has attempted suicide. And at least half of children with mental illness do not get treatment. When schools closed across the U.S. in mid-March of 2020, it separated students from other students, along with advisors, teachers, and other adults at school. Additionally, for many students, school was the only place to get mental health services. Wenemo Okoya is a health education researcher and program director. She is head of high school implementation for the Jed Foundation. The organization helps schools nationally develop programs to support mental health and prevent suicide. Okoya says research has not yet linked teen suicides to the school closures. But, she says, social connections are hugely important for students. For more than 10 years, suicide rates among students aged 10 and up in the U.S. have been on the rise. But experts say the pandemic has brought new worries to young people's lives, along with social isolation. From mid-March through October 2020, mental health-related visits to hospital emergency rooms rose for U.S. children ages 5 to 11 and 12 to 17. That information comes from a recent report by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Nisha Sachdev is with the Center for Health and Healthcare in Schools at George Washington University. She says that during the pandemic, both nationally and worldwide, children and families have been experiencing anxiety and fear for many reasons. They include loss of income and loss of housing or having to move around. The children can also experience long periods of separation from or loss of family members with COVID-19. Research and opinion studies in the U.S., Asia, Australia, Canada, China, and Europe have shown overall worsening mental health in children and teens since the pandemic began. In an October report by the World Health Organization involving 130 countries, more than 60% reported changes to mental health services for vulnerable people, including children and teens. In the U.S., school closures have led to a loss of mental health services for many students. So, how have schools reacted to the changes? And what can they do moving forward? For students with special needs, telehealth has made a big difference, says Okoya. Telehealth is the process by which some healthcare services are provided through the internet. But for the main school population, mental health experts agree about the need for schools to provide structure and routines for students. They also say building a sense of connection and belonging between students and with supportive adults is critical. That includes teachers or other adults at school having daily check-ins with students. Okoya says this is important even if the child's camera is off or if the student does not share their specific problems. How check-ins and other emotional supports are carried out differ from school to school. Okoya says the Jed Foundation works with some schools that have put in place breakout rooms. This involves breaking classes into smaller online rooms so that students can share more openly. Sachdev says some schools she works with in Washington, D.C. have done a great job with check-ins. They have chosen a teacher or other school employee to work with students and families. The system also helps parents or guardians. They no longer have to check in with several different teachers. Other teachers use a mood meter, a kind of map that divides feelings into colors during advisory periods each day. And since students have several class periods per day, their other teachers can do the same if they are able to, Okoya says. Overall, the pandemic has proven that social-emotional learning is just as important as learning other subjects, says Sachdev. Experts like Okoya and Sachdev want the public to understand that mental health care is more than just the relationship between a student and a counselor. Every adult who has contact with a young person may be able to take steps to improve their mental health, Okoya says. Sachdev explains that schools must not be the only ones ensuring good mental health for students and families. Support, solutions, and services are also needed from other fields, including healthcare, the workforce, child welfare, justice, and others, she says. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Doug Johnson with Mario Ritter. We talk about the first 100 days of the administration of President Franklin Roosevelt. Roosevelt's inauguration speech in March of 1933 gave hope to millions of Americans. The new president promised to fight the Great Depression that was crushing the economy. His administration launched into action even before the inauguration ceremonies were finished. Back then, newly elected presidents were sworn into office in March instead of January. Roosevelt's aides began work even as he and his wife, Eleanor, watched the traditional inaugural parade. The lights of Washington's federal office buildings burned late that night. And not just on that night, but the next night, and the next night, too. The nation was in crisis. There was much work to do.
The first 3 months of Franklin Roosevelt's administration were an exciting time. Roosevelt got Congress to pass more pieces of important legislation during this short period than most presidents pass during their entire term. These 3 months are remembered today as the 100 Days. Sunday, March 5th, was the day after the inauguration. Roosevelt asked Congress to begin a special meeting later that week, and he ordered all the nation's banks to close until the economy improved. Roosevelt also banned the export of gold. Congress met on Thursday, as Roosevelt had asked. It passed everything that the new president wanted. Both the House and Senate approved Roosevelt's strong new banking laws in less than 8 hours. Roosevelt signed the bills into law the same day.
The next day, Friday, Roosevelt called on Congress to cut federal spending. Once again, Congress met and approved Roosevelt's request immediately. 2 nights later, Roosevelt spoke to the nation in a radio speech. His warm, powerful voice traveled to millions of homes. He gave many listeners the hope that they could once again trust their banks and political leaders. On Monday, Roosevelt called on Congress to make it legal to sell beer and wine and to tax those sales. At that time, there was a national ban on alcohol. But once again, Congress agreed. Roosevelt's success in passing these laws excited the nation. People across the country watched in wonder as the new president fought and won battle after battle.
Washington was filled with activity. The air was full of energy, like a country sky during an electrical storm. People from around the country rushed to the Capitol to urge the administration to support their ideas. Bankers came by the thousands to win favorable legislation. Experts of all kinds offered new ideas on how to rescue the economy. Ambassadors came from Britain, France, Brazil, Chile, China, and many other countries. They came to speak with Roosevelt on economic and diplomatic issues. And members of Roosevelt's Democratic Party arrived by the thousands. They came to seek jobs in the new administration. Americans watched closely what was happening in Washington, and they liked what they saw. They had voted for action. Now, Roosevelt was giving them action.
One of the most important areas of action for the new administration was agriculture. American farmers had been hurt more than any other group by the economic depression. The average income of American farmers had dropped in 3 years from $162 a year to just $48. Farm prices had fallen 55%. The buying power of the average farmer had dropped by more than half. Many farmers could not even earn enough money to pay for their tools and seed. The main cause of the problems for farmers was that they were producing too much. There was too much grain, too much meat, too much cotton. As a result, prices stayed low. The situation was good for people in cities who bought farm products, but it was a disaster for the farmers who produced those products.
Franklin Roosevelt attacked the problem by limiting production. His administration put a new tax on grain products. The tax increased their price and reduced demand. The administration paid cotton farmers to destroy some of their crops. And it bought and killed 5 million pigs to reduce the amount of meat on the market. It was a strange situation. Some Americans had trouble understanding the economic reason why food had to be destroyed so people could have enough to eat. But more officials agreed that this was the only way to limit supply, raise prices, and save farmers. The plan worked. Production quickly fell. Hot weather and bad harvests in 1933 and 1934 reduced the amount of grain even more. As a result, prices rose. Farm income increased 50% in 4 years.
The administration also attacked the problem of falling industrial production. At the time of Roosevelt's inauguration, the production of American goods had fallen by more than half in just 4 years. Business owners reacted by cutting their costs. They lowered wages and reduced their number of workers. But these actions only reduced the number of people with enough money to buy goods. And so production went down further and further. Roosevelt created a National Recovery Administration that sought to gain the cooperation of businesses. Many business owners agreed to follow codes or rules, such as limiting the number of hours people could work. They also agreed to raise wages and stop hiring child labor. And they agreed to improve working conditions and to cooperate with labor unions. At the same time, Roosevelt created a Public Works Administration to provide jobs to unemployed workers. The federal government put people to work on building dams, bridges, water systems, and other major projects.
On monetary policy, Roosevelt and the Congress decided that the dollar should no longer be tied to the price of gold. Other action in Washington included a bill for homeowners that helped many Americans borrow money to save their homes. And a bank insurance bill guaranteed that Americans would not lose their savings. This insurance greatly increased public faith in the banks. Roosevelt and Congress created a Civilian Conservation Corps to put young men to work in rural areas to protect the nation's natural resources. These young men did things like plant trees and improve parks. They also worked with farmers to develop farming methods that help protect the soil against wind and rain.
One of Roosevelt's most creative projects was a plan to improve the area around the southern state of Tennessee. The Tennessee River Valley was a very poor area. Few farms had electricity. Forests were thin. Floods were common. Roosevelt and Congress decided to attack all of these problems with a single project. The new Tennessee Valley Authority built dams, cleared rivers, expanded forests, and provided electricity. It succeeded in helping farmers throughout the area, creating new life and hope.
The 100 days, the first 3 months of the Roosevelt administration, was a great success. One reporter for the New York Times observed that the change from President Herbert Hoover to Franklin Roosevelt was like a man moving from a slow horse to an airplane. Suddenly, the nation was moving again. There was action everywhere. Journalist Frederick Allen described the situation this way. The difference between Roosevelt's program and the Hoover program was sharp. Roosevelt's program was not a program of defense, but of attack. There was a new willingness to expand the limits of government. In most of the laws, there was a new push for the good of the common man. There was a new effort to build wealth from the bottom up, rather than from the top down.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.